And welcome everybody to episode 26 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host Aaron, and as always I'm here with my fellow host Christina, and this week we are joined by a very special guest, member of Fun DNC, and more importantly friend of Christina and I, Melissa. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely, it is lovely to be here with you. And speaking of lovely, we are here covering lovely subject this week on the featured presentation production letterbox challenge, which I don't think I ever say on this show anymore, but I just like to assume people know. But that's what we follow along. That's how we schedule. This week, it was directed by a woman, and we did cheat. We picked a movie that not only have I seen once or twice before, but I have a poster up in my living room, like a good film bro. It's Portrait of a Lady on Fire, directed by Celine Sciamma, depending on where you're from and who you are. But yeah, definitely a favorite of mine, needless to say, and also of Melissa's. But before we go over to Melissa on why she likes it, I want to check in my host, Christina. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm wonderful because school is over, so I can finally sleep and relax. I literally spent my school day ended on Thursday. I spent all of Friday sleeping, and I feel like that was well-deserved because this year kicked my butt in a lot of ways, and I'm excited for it to be over so I can recharge and get ready to tackle it next year.
Yeah. There's definitely not a year where teachers are not important, but I think this year to call you guys just teachers is oversimplifying a never simple job. So thank you on behalf of me and everybody else out there. I've got some great teachers in my past that definitely remind me of Christina. So I know that you're going to have some students who don't forget about you or the memory of you, which is ironically a lot of what this movie is about. But we'll get into that very shortly. Over to our guest before we get to our favorite part, which is Christina reading the IMDb synopsis so eloquently. Melissa, kind of take us through how you felt the first time you saw this movie. Like, what was your situation with this movie the first time? Did you go into it with a bunch of hype and whatnot?
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I watched it by myself and I heard a lot of good things about it. I heard the cinematography was amazing and it was a great love story. That was mostly the two things I kept hearing about, was that the love story was great and just the way that the movie looked was beautiful. And I would confirm both of those things as I watched it for the first time. I was really mesmerized by the performances, and even though it's a very slow type of movie, you have to be patient with it, I thought it was very much worth the wait for the ending of the movie. Versus the second time watching it for the podcast, I definitely was just taking notes a little bit more, so it was a little bit of a different type of watch, kind of analyzing it a little bit more. But I enjoyed it and I cried my eyes out yet again.
Yeah, definitely more than my second watch. My first watch, I'm lucky enough to be in a big city of Washington, D.C., so we get kind of these independent movies in the theaters. Luckily, this was back when theaters were still open at the end of 2019. I went to see this movie after just hearing like buzz from a lot of different people, like William Viviani and a few other voices that I don't listen to a lot of voices before I go into movies, but this is kind of one I kind of had to. I didn't know a lot about. And even at this point, I still wasn't quite into foreign cinema as much as I am definitely now. And I was blown away by this movie. This movie is a must watch in theaters if you're able to ever get to a special screening of it. This movie takes on a different level in the movie theater. I can't really quite quantify, but I mean, it definitely was the intention of the filmmakers with how it was filmed and the sound when the sound does come in. But we'll talk more about that shortly, but glad to have you on. Thank you again. Christina, go ahead and hit us with our IMDb synopsis, and then we'll jump into this discussion. It should be a really interesting one. So looking forward to it.
All right. So the bland synopsis for this bland movie was, on an isolated island in Brittany at the end of the 18th century, a female painter is obliged to paint a wedding portrait of a young woman.
Okay. That is on the scale of, I wish I remembered what our worst synopsis was and our best one, because we need that scale. This is towards the lower end. This is pretty shit synopsis for this movie. I mean, I guess it kind of.
Yeah, there is. She is hired to paint. That is a fact from the movie. And that probably is about 30 minutes of it. So that could have been like a sitcom episode of like, we're just going to paint this chick.
Like, basically, if this movie was transferred to 2021, it's like, I'm going over to this girl's house to take the best Tinder profile pictures I can ever take to get this dude to snap. Because this is like Tinder back in the 17th century with a bunch of rich people. like much. Really breaking it down. So yeah. It's kind of a really beautiful premise to build a movie from to start, though. I mean, beautiful and sad at the same point. But yeah, I did do quite a bit of research on this time period and like this particular practice to see if this was based on actual fact. It is something that was done back in the 18th century. So like 1790s, I believe this takes place in. And I mean, it just was done between a very certain class of people. And I mean, you kind of see it when they do peek in with the mom throughout. She's like, I don't care. I just want to get to Italy. Like, and it's like, no matter what, which of my daughters gets me there? Because this was not originally Heloise's role to fill, but we'll kind of get into all that as we go. Right away, I get if this isn't anybody's bag who's listening. I can't really hold it in. I hold this movie as a masterpiece. I definitely do. I cried every single time I've seen it, and I gained so much about it. But this movie, to be able to sit, watch, pause, and take notes on like facial expressions, eye contact, synchronization. I mean, it made me love the movie even more, which sometimes you watch a movie and you break it down and you're like, oh, I took away all the magic. I've discovered more magic as a result of doing it this way. And I'll kind of try to explain that the best I can as I go, Christina. And I do want you to share your kind of feelings as you go too, because I know this is an extremely slow burn. You know, for anybody, I'm not trying to talk to this movie absolutely takes its time, especially the first hour before it literally catches on fire. And then after that, it's like a fuse in it. The last 45 minutes, if you call that slow, I'm not sure we're watching the same film.
Yeah, I think objectively, this is a pretty like pretentious movie. So it's like, okay, I have my pretentious pants on today, which is a little uncomfortable for me, but that's okay.
It is as artsy as an art movie. Yeah. I mean, it is so artsy.
French. It's like, literally French.
Yeah. It's just like, you will hear this a lot amongst, you know, type of film critic, but it's like, you can pause any part of this movie and it's a painting, but you really can, because I kept doing it. I was like, I'd hang this. I mean, the color in this movie, director Celine Sciamma directed this movie in 8K because she wanted as much color as possible, and particularly on a big movie screen, you really do see it. But yeah, it starts off with Marianne, who is not the portrait of the woman on fire, spoiler alert, but rather the artist. And she's in every scene in this movie, first of all. I mean, from start to finish, she's in every scene. And she just clearly like just seems like kind of a serious teacher at first. What were your thoughts on the teaching scene, teacher Christina?
So I've taken a few art classes back in the day, guys. I took art one and art two back in high school. So, you know, I kind of knew what was happening here. But it's very factual in the sense of like hands really are hard to draw and the shading on that needs to be on point. But she was very specific and she was very direct with what she was teaching, which you have to be. You have to be very concise and specific if you're describing something for somebody to draw, because you're basically only copying whatever it is that you see. So she has to make sure that they're seeing all the correct lighting, all the correct detail, especially because you have to teach somebody sometimes to see all that. So I thought that whole part was very interesting. I loved anytime you watch somebody draw or paint in this movie. Yeah, I was like mesmerized, because I just feel like the wrist, I mean, honestly, when you watch someone paint, like the wrist control to stay in the lines, it's like, I hate talented people. I don't understand. I wish I could be talented. But I loved this movie. It was basically a flashback, because you just thought that this is how it was going to start. And it's kind of like her students bring up the painting that's in the background, and that's kind of like starts our story.
Which means she is an unreliable narrator, because this is a flashback, this is memory, and unfortunately with memory it's not that reliable. So I don't know if maybe that played into maybe why you didn't thought it was a little bland, but or maybe not.
Yeah, and it is a really good point that anybody's memory of a past experience is biased from their point of view, ourselves included. And especially it's, you know, you put yourself in thinking about those lost loves and you will remember every moment leading up to the moment when you like realized you were in love with them, or you had that kiss that you thought was going to leave, whatever it was like. And it's just what you have here is you have a painter who she, first of all, the framing device of having it as a flashback, I had kind of forgotten after the first watch. I remember my second watch being like, oh yeah, this wasn't just told as a love story right from the beginning. You know, it doesn't end up working out. And it's just like, I mean, you see her just transform from like the reason she's focusing on just how to draw the hands and everything is because for her, the emotion, the last time she got her emotion involved and completely captured it, it cost her everything with regards to drawing Heloise, I think. So you really see it with each of the portraits as the movie goes on. The first one looks nothing like her and doesn't capture her. And it's like amazing because one of the eyes is like half open and caught at a different emotional state than the other because she had to draw it from memory. This is before Heloise even would agree to. She was just supposed to be the secret friend who was paid to be on this like utopian feminist island where no men exist. And the only men that do drop off the women. And yeah, and the men do suck, even though they're in this movie for 30 seconds. They make sure to let you know they suck in multiple ways, which we'll get to with Sophie in a little bit. Of course, the maid, like pretty much our third lead. But the men, even at the beginning, as they're taking her to the island, her canvases fall off into the water. It shows the guys all look at the canvases. Like none of them do anything. None of them like try to like get over there. Immediately, Marianne jumps into the water. It's very classical way to show she will do whatever she can for her art. That is her first love, was basically her skill of art. So
absolutely, you know, also yeah, the way that scene was filmed, like I hated it and loved it because I am somebody who easily gets seasick, and like it was a little hard to watch. It's like, oh gosh, okay, like they're really making sure it looks very rocky.
Yeah, I mean, the cinema, it feels so claustrophobic at times and so kind of open at other times. And yeah, we're not told a lot. There's not a lot of dialogue other than the art scene for the first one.
Yeah, there's not a lot of dialogue for a while. You're just kind of watching her get settled in and kind of like area and just kind of unpacking her stuff. And you're kind of like, all right, what's going on? But then we find out that who hired her, I guess they referred to her as the Madame. Mm-hmm. We find out that she had two daughters because it turns out that the other daughter had passed away. And according to her, was she a nurse, a servant? I don't know exactly what you would call Sophie. What would you call
her? I would say she was basically a maid. Tended to the island. She had been there for 3 years. And she mentions later in the movie how Heloise had been there for, I believe, 3 weeks at that point. And she still knew nothing about her. And
right, because Heloise was not here. She was at a
convent. Heloise was in the covenant.
Yeah.
Or is that how you say it? Convent? Covenant?
I'm convent, sure. Right? With the nuns? Covenant, I think, is like weird. Probably yeah. Like witch.
Yeah.
Right. She was not a witch.
Who knows? Let's voice this movie
out. I get witches and nuns confused. Sorry. I mean, there's just that tragedy ingrained with kind of the Madame. I think she didn't really talk about what happened to the previous daughter, kind of didn't acknowledge fully what had happened. Well, the maid talks about it with Marianne, and then Marianne says, well, how do you know that it wasn't an accident? And it's a pretty scary answer. She's like, yeah. She didn't yell. That's a pretty telltale sign.
Right. We went for a walk and like I looked behind and she was she had fallen off the cliff. And, you know, she made it seem like it was intentional because she didn't yell when she did it, which is like, was a chilling line. When she delivered that line, I was like, damn.
And I just think there's so many lines in this movie. If this was in English, I'm rolling my eyes kind of at. But being in the French language, being this very romantic movie, me not understanding the language, I feel sometimes lines like when they ask, oh, what's that? And she says, it's a portrait of a lady on fire. If I'm hearing that in English, I'm probably laughing out loud. And then even like, oh, she stepped off. There was no yell. Like that's very melodramatic, but in French works completely for me. And I just think this whole movie does not work if it's in English for me. This is such a French movie while also being so artsy and so pretentious. I mean, it sets you up for when we first meet Heloise with Marianne. That's a pretty startling scene. She is sprinting dead straight for a cliff and doesn't look like she's going to slow down. And like, this is Marianne's like introduction to Heloise after just finding out this story about her sister who killed herself this way.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was also one of the things of like, yeah, you didn't know immediately that it was like, is this Heloise, the sister she's supposed to be friends with? Or are we getting a quick memory real quick and then they're going to jump us back into the movie?
Right. So, like, what kind of movie is this?
What am I about to watch?
Right. And so, like, I mean, it's such a bold introduction to Heloise. The introduction and outro to Heloise is just like, I mean, she comes in with the hammers when she shows up and definitely delivers at the end, which will.
That turn to her is just like, it's so ingrained in my memory too now, because it's just an intense stare into the camera and like, it's just a great shot. And also when she kind of asks her, like, why are you doing this or whatever? And she's like, I've been wanting to run for years. It's like, okay.
They have no freedom in the discussions on what it means to be free in this movie. I think are some of the best ones between Heloise and Marianne. I mean, when she's like, does being alone mean being free? As it's like, I'll let you know tomorrow. It's like the first time I'm going to be alone, like, ever. And just there's so many different, I mean, the lack of freedom to the point where I kind of want to just discuss the part with Sophie and her aspect real quick, I guess, now.
Well, I guess we should kind of just double back to, like, why Marianne is here in the first place. So Madame hires her to paint the portrait of Heloise, but to do it in secret. So she's like, well, Heloise is basically just going to think that you're the friend. So basically just like creepily stare at her all the time. And then in your free time, paint her from memory, which was also difficult to do because her free time was always at night and she's working by candlelight. You're not getting the correct lighting. You can't see the entire canvas. So obviously the first painting doesn't go off very well. And the other problem was, is that Madame never wanted her daughter to be alone. So it wasn't like Marianne couldn't get a free day to just do it and actually work in daylight. I think at one point they talk about it and she's like, well, I'll just keep her home. And she's like, or you could like let her like be alone because she's a grown up. But I guess she was so scared of the same thing happening to her second daughter that she didn't want her to be alone.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's really interesting, her whole mother daughter dynamic and just how clearly she does not care about who the man is that's just in Milan. Well, because
it's the same man. Heloise is marrying the man her sister was supposed to. So it's very clear. Nobody gives a shit about if you know each other, if you like each other. Literally, that's at one point, that's all she says is he's from Milan. That's all I know.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's just the culture that it was back then. That was the expectation.
Like, do you even know how to speak Italian? Because Milan's not in France. So you've been speaking French this whole movie. So do you even know how to communicate with this man? Because we found out that Marianne and Madame knew how to speak Italian, which was like, that part blew my mind. When like these chicks are speaking French the whole time. And then they just were like, yeah, we're just going to switch to fluent Italian. I'm going to just switch right back to French. I even texted Aaron. I was like, I hate America.
Yeah, we know our language. Yeah, we just stole it from the English. We're like, yeah, this works. We're going to use English. We're going to butcher it, but we're still going to use your language.
Right. And then everybody else, please make sure you learn English when I come to your country. I don't have to actually, you know, be polite and learn your language. I'm just going to expect that you know mine.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. But it was really interesting seeing so much of what the interaction is between Marianne and Heloise is not said. Gazes when the other isn't looking at the other person. And it's just, it's so subtle too. I mean, Heloise doesn't smile for the first hour of this movie. Mm-hmm. She does not smile. And it's not in a comical way where it's like, look at this mopey, big, sad face girl. Like, it is just, she's not happy. And like, it's just, and then I love the scenes where Marianne's like having her moments of respite. Sophie, where she's eating, she's like, I need to see her smile. Like, I haven't even seen her smile yet. And she's like, have you tried being funny? Like, it's just like, great line. Like, Sophie is just the MVP. She really is. She's so great. She's a great friend of both of them. Like, too. Yeah. She's like exactly what everybody needs. Sophie delivers, including her tragedy being like what even bonds them more. I mean, Sophie, whatever you need, Sophie's there. And she's going to make some good stew or whatever she was making and get you some cherry stones for your period cramps, which seems like it would be very helpful. The warmth.
I will say the heating pad situation definitely helps. So,
yeah, some like hot cherry stones.
As soon as Marianne sat up and like grabbed her stomach, I looked at Anne and I was like, oh, she has her period.
Yeah.
I was like, she does. I'm a woman, I know these things.
I like how it's brought up again when Marianne is interacting with the madam. And then the madam laughs at something that Marianne does. And she's like, I wasn't even trying to make you laugh. And she's like, but you were funny. And like, it was like a good, I don't remember exactly. I didn't write it down exact. But like, then Marianne just has like epiphany. She's like, oh, like treat her more like a human and she'll show me who she really is. And like, it's just all these things could be easily co-opted into like a terrible Adam Sandler Netflix remake where it's like Adam Sandler plays like a meme maker Instagram influencer and he goes to like this horror Miami beach resort and like has to trick her into falling in love with him so he can make the ultimate meme. That's like how Adam Sandler would misunderstand this movie. He's like, oh my god. And then they fall in love. Like,
I hope that's not what you were thinking of when you watched this movie.
Just came to that thought. Just believe it or not, didn't even think that one through. But it's just like all these things could be done so ham-fistedly, but they're done so sweetly and genuinely, like, throughout. But it's like, yeah, this is like an adorable premise to have people possibly, not adorable, that's probably the wrong word, but it's like a really great premise to have people really learn about each other. And happenstance here, they fell in love. I mean, but it's like you're looking at the person the whole time. Now you're adding like the emotional connection of it, and you're on this island where like you've kind of developed like a utopia for you and you're like two other friends. You're left alone from men.
There's four people in this movie.
Right. Basically. No men on this island. Like it seems.
I don't know. Like a perspective I have is, again, it's from Marianne's memory. Like maybe there was men there that did bad things. They just don't want to remember that. Or maybe
this is a pretty romantic reminiscing of this. And it's just like, when you break it down to how does this work? Why, how would this island, where did they get this island? If they're this well off, like, why are they? So it could be just artists' rendition of their memory, which isn't actually reality.
Exactly.
It's a great point.
We get to see their friendship blossom. You get to see them begin to trust, because there was a few times where Marianne would have to hide that she even had paintings in her room. Because I think at one point, even Heloise was like, I didn't know you were a painter. Like, I didn't know you were an artist. So it's like this big thing about you, like truly who you identify as. Like, you didn't even just casually mention that you're like into art. Not even that you're painting me. I never even knew you painted, and was like very like taken back. Because I feel like at that point, Heloise felt like she had divulged a lot of herself to Marianne and like opened up and was
like talked about the covenant, like talking about the covenant. Yeah, she mentioned how equality was a pleasant feeling. I thought that was like a particular line that stood out for me from Heloise. Like, she just wanted to be an equal. And I think that's one of the best aspects of this love story, is that they truly are equals. There's not a dynamic where one is holding this extreme power over the other, especially once the secrets are out of the way. And it does get to that tragic point when Marianne is realizing she's starting to have feelings for her, and but realizes, I'm in too deep. What's she going to do when I find out? Like, kind of the classic rom-com situation coming up where it's like, oh my god, she's gonna find out I hired this private investigator to follow her around if it was something about Mary or whatever. Like, she's gonna find out the secret that now we're gonna have to, if we fight through that, man, this is a hell of a romance, but can we get through the ultimate secret that I wasn't here to be your friend? I was spying.
There wasn't much of a power dynamic. They were pretty equal the whole time. It was more just building that trust with each other. And I think, honestly, with her coming forward, like saying, hey, I am a painter. This is why I came to see
you. It's a huge moment.
Yeah, it's a huge moment to have them actually like build that trust with each other, I think. Even though at first, you know, she was mad and upset about it, I think. Ultimately,
yeah. I mean, imagine from Eloise's perspective, though, if you found this out and you're like, oh, that's what all the looks were for. Like, it.
Right. Like, I thought you liked me, but you were just examining my ear. So you could get it.
Yeah. Like, for a job. So you could ship me off into this forced marriage I don't want to be a part of. Like, it is very tragic. Honestly, just all the way around the whole situation, even after it's out there, because it's like once she does her job, like that's the end, and sending her off into somewhere she doesn't want to be.
Well, and it's you have this, the feelings are growing, and you know, Marianne is one of the people that convinces her that Milan's beautiful and like you should go and you'll love it, and kind of like hyping her.
She doesn't have any idea, but she's like, now it makes sense why you were trying to justify my exile. You feel guilty. Right. Like, you don't mean any of these things. This is all under false pretense. So it's like, anytime things are under false pretense, how do you really know what to believe and what not to believe? It's a heartbreaking scenario and a huge fracture of trust, especially when it's only been able to be built over like, what, a week or so at this point. It's a very intense week, but still, they don't know each other. She's like telling her about like music and orchestras. Heloise is like, I've never even heard an orchestra. I want to go and hear some organs. And she's like, oh, really? Organs are kind of dreary and depressing. And she's like, organs are all I know. What do you mean? I like organs. What about orchestra? I don't know what an orchestra is. I think she even says, Heloise says, it's not easy to relate to music. Like, this is just how like.
Yeah, she's very much closeted, like in a lot of ways, even though Marianne, in regards to like the class structure, she might be lower because she's a painter versus, not really sure what their position is, but it seems like they're some kind of royalty or.
They seem very affluent and to the point where they've been controlling their daughters their entire lives. And it's like, either you're like a slave to religion or you're a slave to some rich dude in Milan.
But regardless, Marianne still has this like freedom about her, even though she is quote unquote like lower class to Heloise. So it's kind of interesting that she's kind of like this modern woman with a little bit more freedom. And then this woman that's in a higher kind of class structure has never heard of an orchestra, or, you know, she has to go to mass to listen to music, which is interesting.
Yeah, she's never been in love. Were you saying she'd never been in love, Christina?
Yeah. She like asks Marianne what it's like. And Marianne talks about how she's been in love with a man before.
Yeah, she does talk about that. She talks about how after that, she's now sure she'll never get married. She'll take over her father's business. You know, like she's like, oh, love is not for me. And it's just like kind of the classic one wants to be a hopeless romantic or have the chance of having that at least. And the other's like, I had it, didn't work out, never again. And it's the classic never say never, especially with love, because that means it's, you know, coming your way. We're heading with Marianne and Heloise from here after they get through that. After they get through that rough spot, for sure. I mean, do we want to
talk about my least favorite storyline of the movie?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk. Yeah, do you want to lead us into it?
I just felt like this part of the story just honestly just wasn't needed. Like, I just felt like this didn't even need to be in the movie. I don't know why they put it in there. It was hard to watch, I think. I mean, at that point, she said, not to get too graphic, I mean, she missed 3 monthlies. So at that point, she's 3 months pregnant. And then they decide, well, we're going to help you get rid of the baby. And I'm not here to, I'm very pro-choice. But at that point, I'm kind of like, girl, it's been 3 months. Yeah, ride it out. Somebody will take care of your baby. Especially, it's not, you know, modern medicine. I mean, they had her running laps. I mean,
she's
it was
hanging from bars. Right. She's just like hanging from bars.
Weird stuff where it's like, you're not, this isn't going to go well. Like, you're going to, somebody here is going to get hurt. And, you know, you might not actually do what you are intending this to do. And this could be a situation where it's even worse. And I think what really turned me off from this movie and this storyline is when she's actually having the procedure done as children are laying on the bed around her. And at one point, she is holding hands with a baby. And I was just like, you know, I just didn't need to see all this. And I just don't feel like this added anything to the story. And I just don't think it really needed to be there. I don't think it adds anything to what the movie was about. And I just was like, I don't like that part. So I think if I ever watch this movie again, I would just fast forward through all of those scenes because they were pointless.
I totally respect that opinion. And I'm not going to, for one, it didn't take away from any of my viewings of the movie. I actually did kind of go in this time looking to defend it a little bit because I was kind of aware of your feelings of it after I had heard from you. So maybe I'm kind of approaching a little bit from like the defense position, call me John Goodman in the B movie, Your Honor. But anyways, I just think, yeah, it maybe didn't have to be in there. It did provide another opportunity to, one, show the lack of education that these women have and how Marianne knew to ask, like knew right away, 3 months, that's not normal. But like Sophie, right, like didn't, she's like, I don't know. Like she didn't even know what it really meant. And then even though she kind of did, she was like, well, like I'm expected to do it. Like it's not expected to be my choice. And even though it would be under the pretense of rape, I would assume, you know, it's like one of these guys from this boat, which by the way, all the men in the movie are, their faces are never shown. Like I just kind of love that little feminist nod there. Like I'm totally fine with that. Like these men are, they're useless. They are just like transporting the women. They don't even help her up to like the place. There's like, oh, just follow the trees and carry your shit, like as I just like walk around looking to ruin Sophie or something. But yeah, the scene, I thought it was really beautifully shot. I like the subject itself is obviously tough. I thought the part that was really valuable of it, besides the fact that it was like a very like morbid or sad kind of way that Heloise and Marianne got to really bond, was afterwards the reenactment of it, where Heloise was acting as the midwife or with the doctor, whatever the term would be for that woman in that situation. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. And they were able, and Marianne was able to paint it and capture it as a moment of, you know, kind of choice and control for Sophie and reframing it as a celebration for her. Not celebrating like abortions or celebrating that it happened, but celebrating that she had a choice in her fate, even
right,
at the
same life, yeah.
And reframing it with this piece of artwork.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this was the weakest part of the story in regards to the overall story itself. this kind of subplot was a little unnecessary in some ways, but I appreciate it. I do agree. I feel like it was filmed really beautifully. I feel like most abortion scenes that I have seen in movies are pretty clinical and kind of like white walls and just like really kind of isolating feeling. And this was like in somebody's home. It was like warm and inviting. There was a fire going and children. It was a little weird thinking about it, but I definitely think this was the director's kind of political statement a little bit in some ways about abortion, and that I think it's okay to have the choice to, you know, have an abortion or not. And I think maybe that's why the child holding her hand was kind of the highlight of that scene for that reason.
Part.
I get it. Yeah. Taking the swing, it is pretentious as pretentious gets, and it's dealing with a very sensitive subject matter.
Yeah, because I am very pro-choice. Yeah. Do what you need to do. You know what I mean? I just, that was tough to watch.
Yeah, it definitely was. I can definitely understand that. So definitely want to discuss that. I do want to shift to kind of going back to when Eloise and Marianne were talking about the first portrait before she like goes and ruins it. And the discussion between Eloise and Marianne about how Marianne's like, this is how you're viewed. You just don't understand. There are conventions. There are logic. It's like, I'm an artist. I know how to. And then it's like, but you don't understand. Like, there are some things that aren't fleeting. Deep, deep feelings. Like, Eloise is starting to talk about at this point. It's clear that both of them, their romance is really starting to kind of catch on fire, for lack of a better term. And it's kind of this discussion that goes back to the beginning of the movie when they're talking about, is it technique or feeling that matters? And it's both, and especially with a portrait, like you have to capture who the person is for the portrait to truly work. Otherwise, it's this canvas where it's like, yeah, it kind of looks like her. It didn't look right.
It's probably one of my favorite lines from the movie is, that's how you see me, or, you know, something to that effect. I just think that's a really pivotal point of the movie for sure.
Yeah. And then when Marianne just doesn't get that question at first, she's like, yes, like I observed you and like I figured out your dimension. And like, it's like, that's how you see me. Like me again, very pretentious, but I love it.
You just love being pretentious.
I do. And this movie was a big gateway into it in 2019. After this movie, I never looked back. I just think this, it's just like, that's a great scene. And just Marianne so not getting it. And all of a sudden, Eloise learning what love is and just learning it really quickly all at once in the matter of a few days. Doesn't matter. That's not, I mean, the timing is not what matters in, with the intensity of kind of their interactions, I think. Definitely one of the biggest kind of encapsulations of this movie is when they are, Marianne and Sophie, they've played some cards, they've had some drinks. They're reading a story, Greek myth actually, of Orpheus, the son of Apollo, who falls in love with Eurydice, I believe is how you pronounce the name. I apologize if I'm pronouncing that not brushed up on my Greek right now. Basically, it's a story about how Eurydice, the woman, she's killed by a snake, taken to the underworld. Orpheus, son of Apollo, is praying so passionately and with so much love and kind of vigor that the gods hear him. Zeus hears him. They give him the opportunity to basically bring his wife who had died back from the underworld to the living. Yet he has to do one thing. While he's taking her through back to the living, he cannot look back at her. That is just the one. If he looks back at her, she is taken back. She dies again, basically in the underworld for the rest of the time. And then he nearly gets to the surface and looks back right before, because he's so afraid of losing her. Kind of the poet's choice here, which Marianne makes throughout the movie. Also, Marianne is completely Orpheus in this situation where he wants to remember the memory of her and honor the memory of her, and he doesn't want to lose her. So he looks back and he ends up losing her. And Sophie's there. She's like, why would she look back? Why would he look back? Like, that's just the wrong choice.
She just thought he was an idiot.
And so did Heloise until Marianne kind of spoke up and she's like, but it's like the poet's choice, and starts to justify it. And they show Heloise, and there's just so many times where they show one or the other, and they're, you can see them, like, for lack of a better term, digesting the information they just received. Here, you know, she kind of, you can see Heloise get a little alarmed from that answer, but then kind of try to understand it to the best of her ability. Kat, what were your thoughts, both of your thoughts on that scene?
I mean, I loved when Heloise was actually just reading it. She was so excited because, it just kind of thinking of that time frame in history that like art, like books and music and everything, it's just like it was such a big deal, and that she was just so excited reading it, which I thought was adorable. And I loved that Sophie was like, yeah, this guy's an idiot.
Sophie always came in with the real facts. She always gave it to us straight. I just like that in this movie, you would think that Marianne would be learning from Heloise because she was the upper class, probably had the schooling and the education, but it's Marianne had the real life experience, and it seemed, and she's teaching Heloise so much about life. So I think that's where you get that dynamic here. When they're discussing the novel or they're discussing the poem, just they're two very different perspectives or just where they've come from and how they've grown up.
Yeah. No, I just, this is particularly the second half of the movie called back to in so many instances, including the second to last time Marianne sees Heloise. She does look back and then she disappears. She made the poet's choice down to the end, Marianne. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of what the second half of this movie is all about. It's like now they've started to really blossom. We get to the bonfire scene, that bonfire where this movie really catches on fire to another extent. First of all, that music, this out of nowhere, the sorority of singers just shows up on this.
So that was, I was literally, what the F is happening right now?
Oh, so was I. I remember the first time I was really like, oh,
there's
my
not
God.
Really a score. There's not really music in this movie.
No, it's very quiet. Yeah, you hear like the scratching of the pencils at a lot of points. Yeah, and then all of a sudden it's just like this overture of singing. I'm like, where did all these ladies come from? I remember the first time I saw this.
The whole time, where the hell are you, Paul?
And the more you know, when you start to discuss this and maybe put that fine tooth comb and put up the magnifying glass, I'm not sure if this is all really happened the way that Marianne is remembering it. Down to maybe possibly even the very end, which, God, I hope that's not true because the end is a banger. But maybe that's just a little too tragic and perfect to be actually what happened.
I did watch some interviews from the director that she chose to not have a score because she wanted it to be very quiet and, like, to keep it in that time period. Kind of like I was talking about before, that, like, music was such a scarce thing. You maybe heard it once a year to go to the orchestra or if you went to mass. So I thought that was interesting that she made that choice, which...
I love that choice. That's something I don't think enough people understand about movie theaters too. Sometimes the best points in movie theaters is that those absolute silent kind of moments of ambiance where it's like you're surrounded by the waves, it almost feels like, but it's so quiet otherwise. So I love that choice of lack of the score. But yeah, the bonfire scene, I mean, this was, even on my first watch, I'm like, I'm not sure if this is really happening. Who are these ladies? Her dress then catches on fire, and then just like one lady like randomly comes over and tackles her. I'm like, that dress is on fire, bitch. Like, what are you doing? Like, and just like,
I honestly thought it was like, oh, am I watching The Witch? Okay, no. Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, I mean, they were all in the Covenant.
Right, there we go. I saw that. Was Eloise in the Covenant or Covenant? That's the real theory. But yeah, I did love this scene still. At this point, I'm all in on this movie and these vibes. And it's just like, there's literally fire between them in shots where they're looking at each other. Then it just keeps on kind of blossoming from there. But there is that overhanging tragedy that the closer she gets to her and the better she knows her, the better she draws her and the closer she gets to her leaving because of her work. So it's just... it is just like, it's not a rom-com, but it's a real great premise for like a rom-com or something where it's just like, oh man, like, what do I do? If I do my job, I'm going to lose her. But if I like,
well, that's kind of why she ruins the first painting.
Yeah. Because, well, she finally got what Heloise was saying.
Right.
Like about like, you didn't see me. And she was right. Like there's very subtleties to that first painting, but like wasn't very good. Also, the person before her was a man who tried to draw Heloise, and Heloise never even showed her face to him.
So here's where I have a real effing problem with this movie. Okay. The whole movie, I'm like, you could cut a knife with the tension in this movie. Okay. But no part of me believes that these two are in love at all. I don't believe they are in love, not even a little bit. I believe that they deeply care for one another as like a deep friend, And then we're kind of like, I wonder what will happen if we kiss each other, because like, I've never kissed a girl before. Like, that's really the vibe I got from this. I don't believe they were in love. And the fact that I watched this 2-hour movie for 1 hour and 15 minutes, and then I got a kiss, and then they get scared and run off. I was like, maybe you don't know what you're into. So no, I don't believe that they're in love. I think they were just kind of like forming a bond. They were the only ones there, and they were kind of like, let's see where this goes kind of thing. So no, I don't believe they were in love at all. They didn't act like they were in love. They were so boring. They were just like, oh yeah, this is how we're gonna talk to each other. There was no passion when how they spoke. It was just like, oh yes, and this is how I like things. So no, like, good job, like, you got it on. So like, I'm glad you guys were like horny and into each other, but that was basically about it. It was like, I've spent a lot of time with you, I'm horny, you're here, let's do this. And there was not enough sex in this movie. This was a tease and a half. I was ready. I was into it. They were like turning back, kissing, like feeling each other up. I was like, let's do this. Let's like ignite the fire, baby. Let me believe that you're in love. And then it's like, I get nothing. So no, I don't believe they were in love. And I just think they were just two chicks that were friends and decided, you know what, bang it out for a little while. I'm gonna leave soon. For those of you that can't see the video right now, I think Aaron might cry.
Well, I think that was a choice from the director for sure. Again, with the keeping it very realistic in the time period. You know, sex was such a taboo thing, especially to women, in like keeping it very like modest in regards to like how it was actually filmed. I think that was a choice on her end to do it that way.
Well, but
Christina's here for the male gaze. I'm here to defend the female gaze of this movie.
I was pretty into it too. I was like, all right, Marianne, yeah, paint me like one of your French women. Like,
yes, exactly. Like, I was into, like, I was like, all right, ladies, like, show me what we got. Like, we've been building up to this the whole movie, and it finally happened. And I was like, I don't think you guys actually.
I thought it was beautifully shot.
I didn't say
it wasn't shot well. I just wasn't enough. I felt like I never got enough from them to believe that they were in love. They just kind of struck me as, I've grown close to you because you're literally the only person here.
And like the tragedy waiting for me on the other side is, you know,
right. Like, so it's kind of like, let's see if this can kind of work thing. I mean, because it was only five days.
Well, once like 12, leaves, I think it was probably 12 when you total like the
but like
there from
right.
The,
but once so mom,
it was leaves, a couple weeks. It was probably a couple weeks total though. Yeah.
But once mom leaves is when they get it on finally. And that's only a 5-day time period.
I mean, and the argument you might be making might very much be a huge amount of the perspective Heloise has, which is why she's able to move on. And Marianne maybe is the one who isn't able to move on.
Well, there's a reason that she didn't ever want to get married, because she was in a relationship with a man and realized it wasn't for her. Because she's not into men.
Right. But in this time period, again.
Right. Obviously, this whole situation was taboo. Nope.
So it adds another layer of
tragedy. They were never going to be allowed to be together.
Right. It adds another level of tragedy when you are attracted or like someone who's ultimately off limits. And I've never had it in this way, but I've had it in my own ways. But it's at the beginning of this movie, I was under the impression that it was going to be Marianne who made the choice in the end, not Heloise. And as this movie keeps going, maybe what really ended up happening is that it wasn't anybody's choice, but who moved on more and is viewing it kind of from the perspective you are was actually Heloise. So I understand your perspective. I don't share that perspective myself.
Maybe
the way they look at each other and how they slowly over time, like one's looking at the other and the other looks at the other like, and they start to really sync up in that way. It's just like their simple touches and glance. Right. I mean, it's big things to me, but
I just didn't find it as romantic. Mutual love. I didn't believe that they were both in love with each other.
Yeah, I mean, you know, very well, you could be right. Marianne's introducing Heloise like music for the first time, like when she plays the harpsichord. That's another great scene where, first of all, Adele Hanel, who plays Heloise, just her, she is such an incredible actress. The way she just lets that smile crack through just enough, it warms my heart every time I see it, because it's like you're seeing life being kind of breathed into her for one of the first times in her entire life. So it's just the fact that if she confused her feelings of that as romantic love in the time, that actually does add up to me, because it's like, you don't know, you have no idea, girl. You didn't know what an orchestra was. How do you know if you're like, I can understand your argument. not agreeing with it.
But I think she's, I don't know if she's been with anybody. So for her, right.
Yeah,
maybe she doesn't know yet. Maybe her tragedy is that she doesn't even know what love really feels like. So she doesn't even know if she loves her, if she can love her, and just kind of was like, no one's going to let me love her anyway. And I don't know what I'm missing. So I'm just not going to love her. Sure. At the end of the day, they were never going to be allowed to be together.
Yeah.
Right.
In that day and age, it was never going to happen. So yeah. It was kind of, I think maybe Marianne was in love, but I think Heloise was kind of just like going along with it because they were there and there, she thought maybe there was something, but never really like knew what she was getting herself into.
This perspective starts and ends with Marianne telling the story right. In her view. So completely valid. Honestly, do you have anything kind of add, Melissa?
I don't necessarily disagree fully with Christina. Like, I don't know. I, especially watching it the second time, I was trying to analyze it a little bit more because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're really not together for a long time. It is from her perspective. It's maybe romanticizing the memories a bit more than what actually happened. It's hard to say. Again, we don't get a lot of backstory on any of these characters. It's just kind of like we're presented with the characters and we see what happens for the next few days. But I mean, I still loved the tension between them and like, I love the dialogue between them. It's very much like a dance, kind of chess mind games a little bit too. Very calculated.
And just like how they start to sync up and catch each other's glances as the movie goes on. And like, they get kind of lost in those moments where it's like, I saw you looking at me, looking at you, looking at me. Like, it's just like, those are, everybody loves those moments with someone they're in love with or in major interest with whatever, you know, those are great moments for everybody to relate to. For sure. This is why I love this podcast, because talking about this through text, it kind of gets to a point where I'm like, I can't even listen to Christina talk about this movie. But hearing her out here, I mean, I do.
Sometimes Christina likes to troll Aaron in text messages also.
And it's very easy to do. Anybody who knows me. But I feel like I'm falling in love with Christina all over again through this podcast. I've seen the glances. No one else sees them, but we see them. But we'll get towards the end of this movie. The guy shows up. The guy shows up and she's like, surprised. She's like, they're here. It's like, yes. Like, yes, Marianne, they are here. Like, they've switched roles in so many ways. Like, there's that scene in the middle when Eloise is talking about how she's like, when I'm sitting here, what am I looking at? I've been observing you this whole time too, bitch. Like, it's such a great poetic, like, turn of it. It's like, all of a sudden, you feel like you're being watched by Heloise. And, like, the roles have been reversed. And that's kind of what the whole second half of this movie does in so many ways.
Yeah, and that particular scene, how it was shot, too. Like, I loved the close-up. And then it kind of panned out because it was kind of switching perspectives. But anyway.
Yeah. It's just like those are the things you can pick up on, those kind of different shots in the different directions on those second and third rewatches. And yeah, it was just like, oh, it was a great little flip of the roles there. And just again, it works on so many levels, like so many things in a pretentious art film do for the people it does work for. But they get to the end and Marianne runs upstairs, which again, like, Marianne all of a sudden has a lot of like freedom to just like walk around and access to, like, after like 5 days. She's just like, I'm just going to walk into your room and like just move around. Like, I'm the painter. So like, I can't, hold on. You're still just like a painter, like, who is for hire here. So again, now I'm looking for reasons to doubt Marianne maybe a little bit. But throughout the last little half of the movie, she has those visions of Heloise in her white wedding dress, like keep being behind her. So it's like, this obviously isn't happening. So again, these are peaks into like, maybe as this is going on, it gets even more unreliable perhaps. And then yeah, gets to the last little part and you know, it goes back to the Greek myth where they're arguing and Heloise says maybe she asked her to look back. Heloise, you know, says look back, and Marianne chooses to look back, and then it kind of shuts off the lights in the lighthouse or wherever they were at and fast forwards. Any thoughts kind of on before we leave the island from either one of you guys?
That was a callback from the Orpheus story, because Heloise had said, what if she said turn around? And that's exactly what she said. You know, she said turn around, and then she did. And it's that tragic, poetic ending that I appreciated. But
watching Marianne hug everyone, and like, you see her hug the mom first, and it's kind of like a longer embrace. So I'm like, all right, this is it. Like, you're looking at this like, this is the last time. Like, it's very rare that we know that it's going to be the last time that you're going to hug somebody that you have feelings for. Like, think about any breakup in your life. that you know that this is it. This is the last time we're ever going to hug. So it's like she knows that and just kind of like nuzzled her neck real quick and like couldn't take it anymore and just ran off. And I was just like, ugh.
Even but you felt it here. Even you.
But like I said, I never felt that the love was mutual. I felt that this was very one-sided. I never felt that they were in love with each other.
Just one more interesting, very interesting nugget that could really add credence to your theory, Christina. Celine Sciamma used to date Adele Hanel, who played Heloise. So there could have been a serious gay and a little bit of kind of projecting our own emotions on a past love here. Because even when Celine speaks about this movie in interviews, she starts to refer to Heloise as Adele at points and says, this is Adele just performing. For example, the final scene, which we'll get to and we're going to wrap it up. We really went over this movie much more in plot detail than a lot of movies, just because they so lined up with the themes throughout this movie. Another kind of compliment to the movie. But we get to the final little scene. It takes place a few years later. They don't say how many years later. We see Marianne there posing under her dad's name so that she can do art that isn't just art that women are allowed to do. Paints the Orpheus picture. The art critic comes over. He's like, that's fascinating. Usually you see right before or after it's happened. But here it looks like it's during and he's saying goodbye. And she's like, that is what's happening. That's her view on that moment in the movie. So that's great. Gets into the concert hall.
Well, even before that, though, because she talks about, I've seen her two times since then. And the first time is actually in a painting and you see that I'm going to say 4 or 5 years have passed. How old did that child look? And that you peek to the fact that in her hand is the book and it's to page 28, which is the drawing that Marianne drew for her. And then she says, I see her again at the concert hall. And then the tragic line, the last line I believe of the movie is, and she didn't see me.
Right. And so that line is brilliant because then from there, you're not distracted as you're watching this to be like, oh, she's going to look over. You are fully brought in to Marianne's perspective here. And of course, I don't remember what the name of the song is, but it's a song from the harpsichord. Yeah, of course it is. And you watch Adele put on like the 2 minutes of acting tour de force, some of the best acting I've ever seen out of a person's face. You just see her go through every emotion of that 12 days. And maybe she wasn't in love, but there was love and romance and desire there for sure. And I mean, when she starts
to smile, maybe she realized it. Maybe in that moment, maybe that's what it was.
That's the power of music. That is the power of music. There are certain songs I can't hear to this day because they remind me of particular moments and people in my past that are no longer a part of it. The number one song for me, unfortunately, Mr. Brightside, which was like on the Billboard Top 200 for the world record longest amount of time. It's one of the worst songs to allow for you to trigger past trauma. And legit, that to this day, still, I can listen to it now, but there was a period of time where I could not listen to that song without getting emotionally affected by it. Yeah. And you see
and
it
you here. And you can interpret her crying as missing her, as the realization of, oh my God, I did love her and I let it go and I didn't do enough.
Maybe that song wasn't even playing. Like maybe Marianne wasn't at an art competition 4 years later and just happenstance to run across the same and then be right across the balcony front. That's a little convenient and perfect. She's all by herself. Where's her husband? Where's her, like, and she didn't see you staring at her. Like you can feel when someone's staring at you. It's like, look across. Oh, Marianne. Hey.
Yeah, and those theaters are not that big. It's not like you're at a stadium. You can definitely see across.
But man, can I relate to Marianne thinking about this in that way. If that is the case, for one, we'll never know. But even if that is the case, it doesn't change much about this movie for me and the themes of it and me relating to a lot of Marianne in this movie. If I had to choose which one I related to more. Melissa, do you have any kind of thoughts about this kind of legendary ending? What were your feelings kind of the first time and second time? Was it different for you?
No, not at all. I mean, the first time I watched it and the second time, I just cried my eyes out. I felt like I was just empathizing thing. I don't know. I felt the exact same way. Just like, ugh.
Like I felt my breathing start to replicate hers, like especially the first time in the theaters. Like I was just, And Christina, like I totally get your view on this. I totally get you're sticking to they were not in love. They were confused. That's totally valid read.
They were confused that they were just. I have
maybe an issue. Well, Stockholm syndrome, like a little bit of like, or whatever it is when it's like a tragic situation. You conflate after
right. You just feeling. Like PETA and Katniss. I never believed they were in love. I just believed that they went through this like shitty thing together and like just.
It creates a bond, together. But not right. Really. Fair right. enough.
That I kind of feel like that's where it was, and it was just. It was very beautiful, though, to that it was two women. It's just not something that's on screen nearly enough.
And it, the female director here was a must because the way it was shot was just in the proper right kind of way.
It would be nice to see a romance story like this in a time period where they can have the romance also and really let it. Like, we have how many romantic comedies and romance movies between men and women that are these epic love stories, and it would be really
so you're saying you want to see my Adam Sandler Netflix reboot.
No, what I'm saying is
a portrait of a meme on fire.
No, I want to see this. I want to see this movie between these two women where they can be together, and I want to see if they really do fall in love with each other. Because my other big qualm with movies like this is like, oh, you've known each other for 12 days, and it's my greatest love, and now we're apart. And I'm like, come on, movies, like let that build. Like it's an unbelievable time frame. So give me something of substance where I can really. And I can see them fall in love and we can see that happen. And I just feel like this movie, I just didn't quite believe that they were in love with each other, whether that was how they delivered their lines. And maybe I'm just not used to French films. And maybe I'm used to the more like over dramatic acting of Americans, but I wasn't all in that they were in love with each other.
I think that's a totally fair read. I think that's a good spot to kind of lead this into our rating section. So it's 5 stars, same as Letterboxd, can do half stars. Christina, go ahead and just kind of finish off your thoughts overall on your experience of this movie and just your overall rating.
I thought this was a very beautifully filmed movie. I think I actually didn't hate its pacing. I think it would have been worse. I think it would have been bad if it was rushed. I think it was quiet and appropriately paced, and you could feel the tension with them the first time they met, that there was something going on. Maybe even if they never actually wound up being in love or getting together or seeing anything romantic on screen, that these two women had something going on, some chemistry that was definitely, you could tell on screen that something was going on. I actually really enjoyed that it wasn't in English, and I'm starting to appreciate foreign films a little bit more. I particularly like Spanish better because I understand a little bit of Spanish, so it's like fun for me to like see when sure. I can read it, but that's just like a weird thing. But having a movie in French, because eventually you just forget and you just read it and you're just hearing it and it's beautiful. I really did not like the abortion storyline at all. I really think it brings down the tone of the movie, and I wish we got more of them in figuring out if they were in love or not, with once they became physical and once they could have uninterrupted time now that the mom wasn't there. I feel like the ending was kind of, we had such a build up, and then I feel like I just didn't get enough out of them. So I'm gonna give this 3.5 stars, which I know is shocking for you to think that.
No, I'm pleasantly surprised after the build up for this episode. Yeah. I was ready for a 2 or lower.
But so. the abortion thing really got to me, and I feel like I didn't quite get the love story that I think was supposed to be implied. So I'm going to give it a 3.5.
All right. That's fair. Honestly, I respect all your kind of points and views here. Melissa, I'll let you go next here, and then I'll finish us off.
I mean, I think the acting was amazing. The cinematography was outstanding. I mean, that's the standout. I feel like part of this movie is just the way it's shot.
Yeah.
I mean, every scene and angle and all of that kind of feeds into the story itself, which I love. And I could dissect this movie all day long with you guys, but I know we got to wrap it up. And I thought the directing was just outstanding. I love the choices that she made. And there's definitely a very personal touch to the movie since, you know, they did date. So there's even more, I feel like, meaning and layers there. But for me, it's 5 out of 5. Like, this is a movie that has stayed with me from the first time I watched it. And when I rewatched it last night again, it's one of those movies that's going to stay with me. And when it comes to ratings, that's definitely will increase my rating if it's something that actually like stays with me in regards to like thinking about it or wanting to revisit it again. So,
Yeah, I echo a lot of what Melissa's had to say for a lot of this podcast. And I've had a great time talking this through with Christina also, because it's increased my perspective on this movie, which I actually really appreciate. So thank you, Christina, as always, for being you and bringing your perspective here. That's, I would ask for nothing else. Yeah, this movie is very important to me. Watched it several times, and it does always stick with me. And as I grow and change, it's, you know, there's aspects of it that change, there's aspects of it that remain the same to me. And that's fascinating to kind of go through with a movie that's only been out for like 2 years. 5 out of 5 stars, obviously. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's one of the greatest, you know, romantic stories of all time. Whether they're in love or not is kind of irrelevant to me because it is so inherently romantic. I love the backstory with Celine Sciamma dating Adele as well. So yeah, that brings us to an average of, I think, like a 4.25 or so. 4.5, sorry, I can't math. But yeah, Christina could only take us down a half star with her horrible rating. But yeah, we've got 4.5 out of 5 stars. Thank God I can rest my heart easy tonight that we did not rate Portrait of a Lady on Fire lower than, like, I don't know, like Ocean's 11 or something. Like, I just, like, no offense. There's just certain movies this movie needs to be rated ahead of from my pretentious point of view. So 4.5 out of 5, very good score. We are keeping the theme of the ladies going next week. And next week it is a movie written by a woman. So, which there is tons of choices, first of all. I mean, you can look up almost all of my favorite movies had a woman write them in some way or another. I know it does get, unfortunately, often in the entertainment field with directors and writers limited to like 5 or 6 for women for whatever reason. So, you know, the ones that are, and maybe some of those will be brought up by Christina. I tried to kind of go with some other choices, but I think this should be a very interesting week again. So, Melissa, if you don't have any that you'd like to suggest, we do have some you can choose from. Otherwise, any suggestions that you may have?
Yeah, I have 3.
Great.
Jennifer's Body, because it's excellent. Just a fun, great time. Promising Young Woman, which I know that's, it's a polarizing movie for sure, but it'd be interesting for you guys to talk about it. And then lastly, 13. It's a great drama.
Yo,
Christina, have you seen any of those?
Yeah, I've seen all 3. No, I haven't seen Jennifer's Body, but I've seen Promising Young Woman and 13. And yo, I think I'm still traumatized from 13.
Yeah, I've seen Promising Young Woman. That was a huge favorite of mine from last year. And I think I talked about it with Christina quite a bit already, like off screen. Yeah. So
we're going to need much more time than Digesting Cinema will allow to talk about Promising. Maybe even 13 too, because those.
Yeah, seriously. But those are all banger of suggestions.
Wow.
Thank you very much, Melissa. You do not disappoint. And you've been great this whole episode. I'll go to mine next, and then we'll have our queen, Christina, close us out here. My first is The Hate U Give, 2018 film. I've heard just some really great things about this. I know it's about gun violence in Black neighborhoods particularly, and when this movie came out, it was kind of at a pretty hot time in this country's history for this issue. It hasn't gone away, I'm not saying, but it was a particularly heated times. So that's one I've always been meaning to watch. And I could imagine it could be a pretty interesting conversation that comes from it. My next one is the only Del Toro movie I have not seen. It's The Shape of Water, a Best Picture Award winner. I know the general story about it. I know it's about a fish and a woman falling in love. So I don't know if we maybe want to veer off romance, but it's a movie I've been wanting to see. And I'm going to see at some point here down the line. My last suggestion, I listen to this woman's music quite a bit when I'm walking dogs, and people would probably be surprised if they unplugged my headphones and listen. It's the Tina Turner biopic, What's Love Got to Do with It? Yeah. I've heard incredible things about this movie, actually. I know that it goes into some pretty rough scenarios with regards to domestic abuse. But I also, as much as I listen to Tina Turner, I don't know a lot about her backstory. So this is one of those biopics I've never seen, but I'd be interested to check out. Those are my 3 suggestions. The Hate U Give, Shape of Water, and What's Love Got to Do with It?
Alrighty, so here are my picks from two of my favorite female writers, because I pretty much just love everything that they do. So I tried to pick things that either I haven't seen or something that I have not seen in probably about 20 years. So the first one is going to be by Nancy Myers, Something's Gotta Give, a little Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson. And I have like a real soft spot for Jack Nicholson. I don't know why, but like he's definitely, and this is like embarrassing to say out loud, but he's definitely one of like the old people that I'd still probably do it because I feel like he just has this energy that's really weird to me. So I just wanted to throw that out there to everybody.
Thank you.
I love. The synopsis is a swinger on the cusp of being a senior citizen with her taste for young women falls in love with an accomplished woman closer to his age.
Yeah, I remember watching this on a cruise ship a long time ago with my mom, and he's dating Amanda Peet. And I was like, hold on.
I think you're thinking of It's Complicated.
Am I? Oh.
With Alec Baldwin and Meryl Streep? Maybe Amanda Peet's in both. I don't know.
I swear she's in this movie. I think she's the daughter. Amanda Peet's the daughter. If I have seen this movie, I haven't seen it long enough to remember. What else you got?
All right. The other one, I've never seen this before, would be Julie and Julia. So I don't know if I would like it. And the other one that I have not seen in years, but I have loved for a very, very long time, is the movie Hanging Up, where Diane Keaton, Meg Ryan, and Lisa Kudrow play three sisters. And their father is Walter Matthau, and he's on hospice. So it's just how the three of them are remembering their lives. And it's the typical sibling of like, who's taking care of dad more situation. But it's not as sad as it seems, because a lot of the movie is done in flashbacks and you get to see their relationships with each other. So it's a movie that I haven't watched in a really long time, but I remember loving it when I was younger because it is a beautiful story.
I will go first. I have not seen Jennifer's Body. I have been told by so many people you have to see Jennifer's Body. I could talk about how hot Megan Fox is with Christina all day long. It would be a pure episode for both of us. My vote is Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body is another one I haven't seen. Do you want to just do a vote for each of our suggestions and then we'll narrow it down to three?
Yeah.
So out of Melissa's, we're picking Jennifer's Body.
Yeah. So we're picking Jennifer's Body. We both concur. Out of my picks of The Hate U Give, What's Love Got to Do with It, and Shape of Water, what are you two going with?
My main man loves Guillermo del Toro, so I'll go with The Shape of Water.
That's the only one I've seen, so I'll say Shape of Water as well.
All right. So we got Jennifer's Body, Shape of Water, and then Hanging Up, Something's Got to Give, or...
Julia.
First of all, I've seen Julie and Julia. I only like the Julia parts. The Julia parts. Hate the Julie parts. Like, seriously, cannot stand when Julia Childs is not in that movie. I'm just waiting for her to come back and cook some dope shit. So, no. No. Hanging Up is the one I haven't seen. So, you've also seen it, right, Christina?
I mean, I haven't seen it since I was 12 and I'm 32. Right,
there's my argument against it too. So Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, because you've never seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire anymore. So that argument is good. So we're done with that.
I thought we were talking about not watching movies you've seen before. Jennifer's Body, Shape of Water, or Hanging Up. Christina, your selection between those three.
Hanging Up.
I'll take Jennifer's Body. So Jennifer's Body or Hanging Up for next week's episode. It's up to our guests. Last week, they made the right choice and went with Portrait of a Lady on Fire. This week, Melissa, Hanging Up or Jennifer's Body for our movie written by a woman?
This is tough because I love Jennifer's Body and I don't want to pick my own choice. So I guess Hanging Up.
Okay, so next week on the podcast, we're going to get the ratings getter of all ratings getters. We've got... Hanging Up, everybody's favorite, Diane Keaton, Lisa Kudrow, Meg Ryan, romp. It is, who's it written by? I'm sorry.
It's written by Nora Ephron.
Nora Ephron, also directed by Diane Keaton. So I think this is the only movie Diane Keaton has directed. So we'll see if that's for a reason or not. But 2000's Hanging Up is the choice for next week. Before we take off, Christina is off to her other media obligations here. Melissa, is there anything people might be catching up with you? I know you're in the fan league. Sometimes you're on fantasy film fights over on Feature Presentation. Anything coming up for you?
No, I'm not really big on plugging, but you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Letterboxd at Melissa Woody if you want.
Cool.
She has an amazing letterbox. Definitely follow her over there. And yeah, she makes her appearances over on Featured Presentation. On seriously, thank you and your dog for being here. We appreciate you both. Much better behaved than Chica, as everybody knows. Christina, anything coming up for you that you need to plug?
No, but I mean, rumor has it that the 0-1s might start getting matches again. So you never know, guys. I might be back and you might see me. But I don't really know yet. It's just a rumor.
Lovely. Lovely. So rumor has it, another movie that we could have chosen this week, but we didn't. Instead, we chose Hanging Up. Yeah, there's nothing for me. I'm just
not very good.
Yeah, I'm going to be back here. But for Orpheus, for Eulystheus, whatever, for Aaron, for Christina, for Melissa, keep digesting cinema and keep staying on fire.